You're listening to Holidays with the Stars from Above Board Construction and Roofing and Bicoastal Media. I'm Dave Bradley, your host. Thank you for joining us. We have an amazing performance heading your way right now from the professor of music, Paul Cummings. He is the conductor of the Wind Ensemble for Cal Poly. Here is their winter concert performance for you now on Holidays with the Stars on KKHB Eureka and KEJB Eureka, a bicoastal media station.
Let me say a few things about our group. We have students who are music majors, who are non-music majors, representing majors all across the campus, whether it's environmental science or English, foreign languages, all over the map. And our music majors perform in a lot of different ensembles. Music majors, raise your hand if you play in two or more ensembles. So quite a few. How about three or more ensembles? Yeah, there's one or two. Four? Yeah, okay. I don't know why they do homework, but they're very active, partly because we have a small department and we use them wherever they're available. And then, in addition to our students, we have community members. So we have members of the Eureka Symphony. Raise your hand, symphony members. Quite a few. And they performed their own concerts at the Arkley Center last night and Friday night. So we're always thrilled to have them back for a long weekend of music making. Community members, will you guys all stand up and be recognized? And we also have two faculty, so let's recognize Professor Fred Pempas and Professor Chris Cox. And so we're thrilled to have them joining us. So you heard Three Dances of Enchantment, music by Luigi Zanonelli, Italian-American composer who's writing that piece as he reflected back on his youth as a young filmmaking composer in Italy. And we're going to move on now with music by Richard Wagner, the famous 19th century opera composer. And I'm going to throw a few dates at you first here. Wagner was born in 1813, and then his fellow German opera composer, Carl Maria von Weber, for whom he wrote the next piece we're going to play, died in 1826. So this was when Wagner was about 13 years old. His compatriot, Weber, passed away. Well, when Weber died, he was in London doing concerts. He was, by that time, not only a famous opera composer, but a conductor. And he was touring in London and died in 1826. Well, he was also buried in London, even though he was of German heritage. Wagner, who was ever the uber-German, the uber-Teutonic person, wanted Weber to be brought back to his homeland. So he made arrangements for transferring the remains of Weber from London in 1844 all the way back to Germany, and wrote this piece for the funeral march during which his remains would be interred in Germany. So it's a piece written for band, which is highly unusual by Wagner because he wrote mostly music for full orchestra with singers on stage for operas. He also wrote a few overtures just for instrumentalists, but he didn't write much of anything for wind band. But this piece, this procession for Weber's funeral, where they're reinterring his bones in Germany, needed an outdoor group. And strings don't do that well outdoors. Wind instruments do. One reason we have marching bands all over the country playing outdoors and halftime shows. We don't see many string orchestras doing that. So that's the reason Wagner wrote this piece for wind band. It's a touching, empathic piece showing a very different side of Wagner, a very tender side as he reflects on the life of his fellow German, Carl Maria von Weber. This is funeral music or trauer music. So not your usual Richard Wagner that we might be used to from opera and Ride of the Valkyries and that sort of thing that we hear on TV commercials. So we're going to proceed now with music arranged by a local composer. When Michael Kibbe and his family moved to town 10 years ago, he gave me quite a few of his scores to look at that he'd written for band. And I have them stacked in my office. We've done 5 or 6 of his pieces over the years. And as I was cleaning my office a few months ago, I noticed a piece called Hanukkah Joy sitting in a box. And I had never done this piece, but it was intriguing. So I pulled it out, looked at it, and realized, you know, this could actually work on our December concert. So I contacted Mike, and I said, could we do this piece? And he said, yes, of course. The composers want to have their music played. And then I said, can you rearrange it to fit our group? Because we generally don't have oboes and bassoons. We actually do have one of each in this performance. But anyway, Mike kindly rearranged the piece to really be custom made for our group. He added some percussion and added some complexity to the piece. So I was thrilled that he did that for us, and we really had a good time playing it. We hear a lot of holiday music at this time of year, right? Whether we want it or not, when we go into Walmart or CVS. But not that much Hanukkah music, and so it's nice to do a piece in the Jewish Hebrew tradition. And the pieces you're going to hear in order, I don't think these are in your program, so Mike told me what they are. Hanukkah, O Hanukkah is the first one. Then you're going to hear Rock of Ages, and then Who Can Retell, and then The Hanukkah Makers. This is Hanukkah in Humble, Michael Kibbe. Thank you. piece, and again, thanks to Mike for arranging that for us. Yes. We're going to close this first half of the program now with music by Hector Berlioz. So it's an orchestra piece, transcribed for band. We don't do a lot of those pieces because there's a lot of great original music for wind band. So we don't have to. Bands like the Sousa Band in the early part of the 20th century did a lot of transcriptions, opera themes, and other orchestra pieces. But not so much in the last 50 years as the repertoire for wind band has grown. But this is a fun transcription that actually works very well for band. And there's a little story that goes with it, a little backstory. So sometimes life imitates art, and sometimes the other way around. So Symphonie Fantastique was written in 1830, quite a monumental piece of music, considered the first true romantic symphony, following on the classical symphonies of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. Now, we have Schubert writing some symphonic music in there. Schumann was beginning to write his symphonies. But really, in 1830, when he wrote Symphonie Fantastique, Berlioz kind of staked the claim here for the first great romantic symphony. And it was also a program piece, so there was a story that went with it, and quite a unique story. So it tells the story of a pair of lovers, and it's an unrequited love. So there's a gentleman, we would think that's Berlioz, it's sort of an autobiographical depiction in this music of his own unrequited love for a woman who rejects him, and he decides he's going to take opium to get over his miseries, and he goes into a dream. And the dream tells the story of him being enraged that his love is not being returned. He proceeds to murder his girlfriend, and then is caught, and in the grand French tradition, is marched to the guillotine to have his head chopped off. And so that's kind of the story of the Symphonie Fantastique. The fourth movement tells the story of the guillotine, and there's even a depiction in the music of the head bouncing down the wooden planks of the guillotine. Yes, that is a real thing. Life imitates art, or art imitates life. In real life, 3 years earlier, in 1827, the real Hector Berlioz went to a play in Paris. It was Hamlet by Shakespeare, being done by a touring London company, so it was done in English. I don't know how he understood very much of it, but he probably had, some knowledge of English. So he went to see Hamlet for the first time, and he fell madly in love with this actress who was playing Ophelia, and became obsessed. And if you read a little bit more about the biography of Hector Berlioz, none of this surprises you. Just a very mercurial figure, probably on the spectrum somewhere, took a lot of opium, and was generally a kind of a wild character. So, he fell madly in love with this woman. Harriet Smithson was her name. He wrote her letters for 3 years. And she went back to London. They toured other countries with their plays. And he followed her career from Paris. And she never wrote back. She never responded to any of these entries. But he pursued, and he went on. And finally, she comes to Paris again to do Romeo and Juliet. And this time, she's got an even bigger part. She's playing Juliet. And he goes to see it, and he's just crazy by this time. He tries to talk to her after the performance. She doesn't want anything to do with him. She, by this time, is a famous actress herself. She doesn't need to be bothered with this minor French composer that hasn't gotten any big pieces played yet. So she pretty much ignores him. And he rents an apartment within visual distance of where she's staying in Paris so that he can watch her come home after her stage productions. And who knows exactly what he was seeing, but he's got a reputation in music history now as a stalker because of this episode. And it seems to be largely true. There's some evidence to support all of these details. In any case, there was no murder, and there was no guillotine in real life. But you can kind of see where the Sympathy for the Unseen story might have come from, because he lived out part of it. So, yeah, long-winded explanation there, but it gives you a little bit of the backstory. So music by Hector Berlioz, arranged by Mark Rogers, March to the Scaffold.
Thank you.
we really enjoyed working on that piece for the last couple of months. A lot of being there for us. So after a few weeks, we realized that there's more to appreciate as we continue to progress for the rest of the semester. So pieces are like that sometimes, just like rewarding you for more time. We're going to continue now with a very slow, expressive piece. This is from the Requiem Mass by the French composer Gabriel Fauré. Kind of in keeping with French music in general, it's not a ferocious or kind of wild Berlioz type of piece. In fact, you would contrast the Fauré Requiem with the Berlioz Requiem, which is kind of bombastic and loud, and there's a dies irae section in most masses that's pretty wild and loud and brassy. Fauré's is not that at all, and this piece kind of exemplifies that. It's from the very end of his Requiem Mass, and I'll read a little bit from the program notes that our publicity person prepared. The Archbishop Julian Porteus wrote about this piece. The Church's prayers in the funeral liturgy, known as the Requiem Mass, have been the source of some of the most beautiful pieces of music produced in the Western tradition. The Requiem by Fauré stands among them. This work has sometimes been criticized for its serene nature. Other works have carried a greater sense of dread and anxiety of being cast into hellfire. The tradition of the Dies Irae, the Day of Wrath, is lacking in Fauré's work, and he said, the composer said, it has been reported that my Requiem does not express the fear of death, and someone has called it a lullaby of death, but it is thus that I see death, as a happy deliverance, an aspiration towards happiness above, rather than as a painful experience, unquote. These are the words of a man of faith, Gabriel Fauré. Yes, death is a human tragedy and a source of loss and grief for those mourning the passing of a loved one. But the faith of many of us and the liturgy itself expresses life is changed, not ended. This is the last section of the Requiem Mass by Gabriel Fauré. Again, thanks so much for coming tonight. You know, it's kind of wet and cold out there, but it's pretty easy to stay home in your warm living room. So we appreciate you being here, supporting live music. We're going to conclude our concert with the piece by Leonard Bernstein. First, just a couple of announcements. We have lots of concerts over the next couple of weeks, including next weekend, Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, we have the University Singers and Humboldt Chorale combined with an orchestra, chamber orchestra, doing a mass by an Afro-Brazilian composer named Garcia. So that's going to be a big event with about 150 people on this stage. So next Saturday night, 8 p.m., and then Sunday afternoon at 2. And then, what am I forgetting?
Jazz orchestra?
Friday night? Okay. And all of our concerts are posted on our website, the California Humboldt Music Department. You can see all the offerings, including some student events coming up. I just want to acknowledge one student in particular, and maybe more because I'm not sure if I've got everybody accounted for, but we have a graduating senior that we want to recognize. Jerry Teklu is graduating. Jerry is
thank you.
What an amazing performance from Paul Cummings, the director of music and the conductor of the wind ensemble for Cal Poly Humboldt. It is Holidays with the Stars, a presentation of Above Board Construction and Roofing and Bicoastal Media. I'm Dave Bradley. We still have plenty on the way for you. In fact, we couldn't do it without our amazing supporters of the program, which includes the Bayside Community Hall, Cap C, Evans Mechanical, In-N-Out Auto Detailing and Oil Change, Jessica Najera Tax and Bookkeeping Service, Magic Touch Aesthetics, McKinleyville Ace Home and Garden Center, Redwood R&R, Sempervirens Gardening, Tracy Day, your local State Farm agent, Wildberries Marketplace of Arcata, Redwood Capital Bank, Alves Inc., and North Coast Mercantile. Thanks for being here and celebrating the holidays with the stars as we continue.